Now, we referenced a worrying incident that occurred recently. Two children left very, I suppose, frightened by a terrifying incident. Katerina joins us on the programme now. Thanks for your time, Katerina. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Right, okay. So what happened?
So basically, I took my two children out of the car, put them on the footpath as normal. They were standing there. Then I went back to the car to get their school bags. And a group of boys let off a firework. And it went right through the two of them and just missed my youngest son's leg and hand. He could have lost both.
My word. So it was lit and propelled itself in the direction of you and the children?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That could have caused no end of damage to either of the children or both.
Oh, absolutely. It was done intentionally. And I just don't think, now, in fairness, the school in question, I've been in contact with the school and the Gardaí, and they've done major patrols there today. And it's a whole different story. There's no fireworks going off. They're searching the children. And, you know, they're also selling them outside a shop in Buncrana in the morning. I found out since then. And they're taking them from the shop and bringing them down. Now, they're not selling them in the shop, outside the shop. They're obviously getting them from the north. And then they're selling them outside a shop and they're bringing them down and selling them.
How do they get away with that? I mean, that's it's highly illegal. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're being snuck around on Facebook or Snapchat. You're saying they're being sold on the street?
Oh, they're being sold on the street. But now, in fairness, the Gardaí were fantastic and they sent plainclothes officers up to the area this morning to patrol it. And, you know, they're doing everything they can do.
Yep, exactly. We don't want to compromise. I don't want to compromise any investigation. Okay, that's all right. So, but it would make you wonder what was going through these people's heads to think that they could...
My children are 3 and 4. You know, they were standing outside the road waiting on their school bags.
But to fire a firework in someone's direction, that's the point I'm talking about. Like, it's... And then to carry on and let one off into the sky as if nothing had happened, like...
It was like, did they want to scare them? Did they want to intentionally hurt them? I'm not too sure. And then I turn around then, and I'm a teacher myself, and I'd obviously taught a couple of them. I didn't see their faces, but they went, oh no, that's so-and-so's children, let's run. So they knew.
Right,
like, as if my children make any difference to anybody else's children. They don't. You know, children are children, and they don't need to be scared, and they don't need to stand on the side of the road and have fireworks thrown at them in the morning at 10 to 9.
Now, how are they? As you say, they were just getting ready for the start of the school day.
Yeah, they're okay. They're fine. The oldest boy was a bit dazed by the whole situation. The youngest boy just kind of, he didn't really take it on. I think he thought, you know, fireworks, Halloween, whatever. But I've spoken to them, and no, they're okay, thank God. They're just a bit nervous now with noises. The youngest boy, he would be nervous anyway with dogs. He had an incident with a dog, jumped up on him once that wasn't on a lead, and he's scared of dogs. Now he's scared of noises. You know, he's anxious enough as it is. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need this put on top of everything else. But I think parents really need to check, you know, their kids' bags in the morning. Like, where are they getting €40 to go and buy fireworks in the morning? Like, I couldn't get €2 off my mommy, you know, to get sausage rolls when I was in secondary school. Where are they getting all this money from? And, you know, check your school bags and check everything and make sure it's not your child that's behind it.
And I think to have the conversation with them, because I don't think these young lads, and I could be wrong, but I don't think they would have set that off in your direction if they were considering that they could have blown someone's hand off or took someone's eye out.
I don't think they realise the implications.
Yeah, so I think maybe that conversation's important as well, you know, to understand the dangers. Because as sure as night follows day, there'll be someone down in the ED this weekend losing an eye, losing a finger, something like that there. Yeah. Because unfortunately it happens every single year, Katerina, even though we do these types of appeals on an annual basis. So I suppose us as parents and guardians, we have to get tough and have that conversation and check the school bags in the bedrooms or wherever they might be.
Yeah, I think everything has to be checked. I think you just, like, we all lead busy lives. I'm the same. I get the kids out in the morning and we're go, 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 you know, but the older children now, like, these boys were around 14, 15, roughly, by the height of them. And, you know, their parents need to check their bags and they need to speak to them in every aspect about the dangers, because they think it's a bit of crack. It's not a bit of crack. I could be in a whole different situation this morning.
Oh, it doesn't bear thinking. And that's why we're speaking about it today, to ensure that no one finds themselves in that situation. Maybe they are old enough, they should have known better. Sometimes I can people think I can be too soft, you know, 15, 14, 15, 16, you should know the dangers. Well, listen, thank you, Katharina, for helping us highlight this. Hopefully the younger one particular, I know what it's like when the dogs jump up and how these things stick with young ones, but hopefully they'll be grand in the long term. Yeah. But thanks very much for helping us highlight it again.
All right, thank you very much.
Take care, bye-bye. Best wishes to everyone. All right, Katharina there. Anyone else the target of an attack by firework? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Lots of planes, says a listener, were unable to land on Sunday. My husband's plane, Turkish Airlines, was diverted to Birmingham. He didn't get home till yesterday evening. It was beyond the control of pilots or airlines, and people had to do as they were advised in these circumstances. I'm afraid Ryanair cannot be blamed in this instance. No, I mean, they can't be blamed because of the T's and C's. But I suppose if you've had four failed attempts, there's a suspected heart attack on the plane and everyone's up to high dough and you've been sitting on the plane for 10 hours, I suppose, and in fairness to Darren, he doesn't think Ryanair are going to cough anything up, and he says that's not why he was speaking to us. You do make a judgment call and say, am I going to put myself or my family through this again? Because they did try and land again. The fifth was unsuccessful. They eventually got down on the sixth. A wee note, I was in Letterkenny ED yesterday for 7 hours. I got all my procedures looked at. It was very, very busy yesterday from early to late. One thing I noticed is that when a person comes to the ED, they're there because they have to be there. When you arrive, all you're waiting for is your name to be called. Young, old, mothers and fathers with young children all are waiting to hear their name called. The system for calling a person's name has to be looked at. The nurses and doctors have enough to do. This information should be relayed by one person with a caring voice. People don't understand if it's their name called or not, as all patients are waiting for the name to be called. I propose the HSC employ just one person for calling patients' names and directing them to the proper door they're called for as well. More seating for patients, as yesterday there were as many standing as there were seated. No high-vis vests in Clonmany Garda Station, says a listener. Okay, we were talking about the importance of wearing high-vis. Pat the Cope is on the ground working, helping all people. He lost out last time, regardless of age. That comes in from Martin. Hi, Greg. Do you know anywhere where people can recycle clothes? They don't bin cash in places are closed. People aren't taking anything due to export reasons, apparently. Where can people and even charity shops get rid of clothes that cannot be repaired? Obviously, nobody wants to dump them in a skip. Yeah, but the bottle banks and all, they normally have a clothes bank, don't they? That's where you could put them, and there are charities that benefit from that. If I've misread that text or anyone else has any further information, please let us know. Mr. McConlogue's not on Highland because the presenter is biased against him. The presenter is pro Sinn Féin. No, not at all. And the one thing about here, everything's full, open and transparent. Every single show I've done is available for you to listen back to or you can watch it back for that matter. And I am pretty confident that that's not the case. And I'm certainly not pro any party in particular either. I mean, we've had people saying today that we're Sinn Féin bashing and others saying that we're pro Sinn Féin. So it's very hard to know what the story is. But I'm certainly not anti any individual at all. Am I pro questioning about important issues that affect people? Yes, that's it. That's all I've done. Right. Emma Gover is the wee Donegal mammy, of course, and is with me now. Hi, Emma.
Hi, Greg. Good morning to you and your listeners.
Good to talk to you. Right, we're in the mouth of an election now, Emma, so it looks like November 29th. But you have an appeal to government.
I do have an appeal to government and the powers that be. Look, we know that the finance bill has to be get proper scrutiny and get through Dáil, and I respect that that's going to be done on the 5th of November, and it's a really important piece of legislation, so I understand it has to get proper scrutiny. However, if we just knew the date of the upcoming general election, and the reason I'm asking this is for people who would require a postal vote, because once the Dáil is dissolved, up until 2 days after the Dáil is dissolved is when you have when you're eligible to apply for one, and then the portal's closed, let's say. So you know, and there are quite a few people who would be eligible for a postal vote, full-time members of the Defence Forces, people who have illness or disability, students who are in full-time education in an institution in Ireland but are away from the home address which they're registered in, those who can't attend their local polling station because of the occupation, those who are in nursing homes, members of the Garda Síochána Síochána, and those who are in prison as a result of the order of the court.
That's a lot of people when you add them up, isn't it, Emma?
It really is, you see. So, and the thing is, as I say, 2 days after the dissolution of the Dáil, in the case of a general election, or 2 days after the date of the order of appointing a poll day, in case of a Dáil by-election. If it's different for other elections or other referendums, it's 22 days after it's been called, but for the Dáil or for by-elections for the Dáil, it's 2 days after it's been announced. So that's quite a short window of time when we don't know the exact date that the election's going to be on, if you get me.
Yeah, I do indeed. I didn't realise the window was that narrow, Emma.
Yeah, so, you know, for the likes of my own daughter, you know, we've talked about her, my daughter many times, she's got to be on your show, Michaela. Michaela would have used a postal vote in the last local election because she was, although she voted in person for during the referendums there in springtime, she was too ill during the local election to go out. So
Yeah, and you have this knowledge, Emma, as well, which I don't know everyone has either. For instance, I had no notion about this, but I've never had to come across it before. It just leaves a very limited amount of time for people to have their democratic right to exercise their view.
And what I would be saying to anybody that feels that they may be entitled to a postal vote or may need it to use a postal vote is, you know, you can start applying now.
Right.
You know, so, you know, you can go on to the Citizens Advice information. You can download your form or contact one of your local representatives. You know, I know Councillor Jack Murray from Inishowen had something about this up in his social media a couple of days ago. And I'm sure now a lot of others will be putting it up on their social media.
Emma, just, to be clear, because I'm learning as we speak now. So registering for postal votes is open now, but that window closes 2 days after the election is called.
As far as I'm aware, you can start looking into it now. But like, for example, if I'm Taoiseach Simon Harris does what he's expected to do, which is dissolve it all after the finance has gone through the Oireachtas, then you will only have 2 days after that, and then the portal closes.
Yes. I get you, and it might be it's just too short
and
notice.
Some people may be confused because we were hearing a lot about the postal votes for the local elections and the referenda there, but that's 22 days you get for that. For the Dáil, it is 2 days after it has been called, the court closes. It's really important that anybody who feels that they may be entitled to a postal vote, and as I said there earlier, I'll just reiterate that information. It's an Irish diplomat posted abroad or their spouse or civil partner who is living abroad with them, a full-time member of the Defence Forces, somebody with illness or disability, those who may reside in a elderly care home, those who are studying full-time at an educational institution area which is away from the home address with which they are registered in, those because of their occupation, service or employment, who may not be able to attend their polling station. You may also be eligible for it if you are in prison as a result of a court order, or a member of the Garda Síochána. So like the frontline workers and things like that. So it's really important, you know, because I know I'm always banging this drum, but you know, there's no point in giving out after the election about who's elected if you don't use your vote. You know what I mean?
Now,
it's really important to exercise your constitutional right.
So you could go onto the County Council website and you can register right now. As you say, the closing date for receipt of completed application forms for inclusion in the postal and special votes list for a general election will be 2 days after the dissolution of the Dáil. So you click in application forms And there's a lot of forms there. ERF1, ERF2, PVC. Yeah, so but anyway, it says register to vote.
You got to work your way through it. So it's not as simple as just registering online to vote. So that's why I'm urging people now who may feel that they are entitled to postal, please, you know, start looking into it now. Because as I say, once Taoiseach dissolves Dáil, which is expected to be after the 5th of November, everybody kind of knows that it's going to be the 29th of November, although he won't say it. And I would call on the government just to announce the date before, even if they haven't dissolved Dáil yet, because, you know, it's only fair to our members of society who may need a postal vote, like my own daughter, who availed of the postal vote. They have as much right to vote as everybody else, and it's their constitutional right to vote.
And interesting,
so I would encourage them to release the date.
And more interesting maybe this than in previous elections, you can actually register to vote if you don't have an address. There's a specific form for that.
That's because of the homelessness crisis as well.
Yeah, that's so what I'm saying,
Look into it, and as I say, I would encourage the government and the powers that be to get in touch with their own government officials down Dublin and say, listen, not just the people of Donegal, but everybody in Ireland has the right to know the date so that they can get their ducks in a row if they are not able to attend their polling station.
All right, if you want to say what form you need, you can email the council franchise@donegalcoco.ie and they'll return the forms to you, to your email address as well, if that would suit you better. All right, Emma, thanks very much for your time. Emma Gover there, the wee Donegal mammy. Thank you for all of your comments coming in this morning. We will get to them as the morning wears on. But next, I want to welcome onto the programme author Cúnamh McGann. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And I have in my midst a book from you. It's called Everything is Manassam, 365 Days of Celebrating Irish Women. It's a cute wee thing. It's very traditional.
It is. Is it too early to say stocking filler?
Oh, never. No. This is the time to chuck your book into the Christmas market. Right, so Manassam, obviously, it's a play on words. Women are awesome. Right, so why did you decide to come up with this book, Cúnamh?
Well, I suppose for years and years, I've been hearing stories about women, Irish women in particular, who've done amazing things, and you don't often hear about them actually. And what I wanted to do was draw as many of them as possible into the one book. And I thought, what a great idea to hang it on, 365 dates. That's, of course, until I tried actually piecing them all together, because each date is the date of an event or an achievement for an Irish woman or for Irish women in general.
We don't celebrate women enough, I don't think. I'm speaking to you from Donegal, for an example, where we've had incredibly influential women, both alive and those that have passed. And to the best of my knowledge, we don't have a single statue that actually recognises an individual woman. There are statues of women, right? Don't get me wrong. But we don't, as far as I'm aware, and I'm open to correction, I'd love to be corrected, we don't have one single statue recognising the amazing contribution of the many, many women that we've been lucky enough to have from Donegal.
Absolutely. And, it's not just Donegal, it's everywhere. It's sort of nationwide. There's a tiny number of statues dedicated to actual Irish women. I think in Dublin, out of all the hundreds of statues in Dublin, it's just half a dozen women, I think, that are represented. So it's no great surprise. We've been very slow to credit women in the same way that we credit men.
So, I mean, obviously, we have to have a hook, don't we? 365 days of celebrating Irish women. I presume there can be many a sequel to this book. So how did you go about drawing the information together and selecting the stories, which are it's incredibly accessible? I can't emphasise that enough for the listener. But how did you go about gathering the information together?
So I suppose what I started with are there's women there that have a very specific date that I needed to keep to. So a woman who achieved something on a particular date. So, for example, there's a suffragist called Mary Maloney, and she's most famous for following Winston Churchill around with a bell. And every time he tried to speak, she would ring the bell and drown out his words because he'd been disparaging about the suffragette movement. And I knew she was hooked to that particular week, those particular dates. So there were women like that were very specific. Specific dates, and there are women then who had much more sort of career highs that I could choose from and move them around a little bit. So I had a little bit of leeway with some of the women.
Also to a lot of leeway in time. Some have made their significant contribution recently and are still continuing to do so, and others are historic, of course.
From the 1700s right up until today.
Which is kind of interesting. Why did you decide, you know, not necessarily... So that I suppose it's to recognise a woman's influence or contribution regardless of the time frame. Sure, what difference does time make?
Indeed. And I suppose what I wanted to give was a feeling of the progress that we've made. So there, we have been making progress in terms of women getting the vote, women securing sort of equal pay, all those sorts of achievements as well. And I wanted to highlight the women along that way. So it gives a good feel of where we've come from and where we're going and where the momentum is going.
Yeah, brilliant. So how many were left out? Like, is this the first of many?
Do you know, as soon as you publish a book like this, somebody's like, hey, why aren't they in it? So it's unfortunately, that's an occupational hazard with a book like this. So certainly there are women there that I wish I'd put in. But I still think I've gotten a good cross section across all sorts of, across the arts and politics, music, theatre, film, science, social justice and feminism as well.
I was going to say, who's the market? But sure, the market's everyone, especially when it's just been launched. But I'm thinking, you know, sometimes you have to see it to be it, right? And I think, you know, for younger girls and younger boys to actually understand women's role in society, especially with some of the toxic masculinity we see around nowadays, but also for younger girls, even in transition year or whenever it might be, that might want to feel inspired, because there's nothing beats seeing what others achieve to sort of set your own goals.
You're absolutely right. And I think, I don't know, have you ever heard of, you know, in the X-Files in the 1990s, there's a thing called the Scully effect. And that was women seeing a scientist portrayed in a positive light. And it actually impacted the numbers studying science. So yes, absolutely, see it, be it. And I would love to, I would love to think that this book would be in the hands of teenagers, maybe older teenagers. There's some, it kind of dips into areas of equality and things like that. So it might be more suitable for slightly older teenagers, but I would love the idea that they would be inspired by some of the women in this book.
Definitely. And that's always at the parents' discretion as well, because we know our children best, don't we, and their stage of development. Is there any, having gone through it all and obviously having a general interest in this anyway, is there one particular lady that stands out? Not that she is your fave. I'm not saying that. As such,
it's like,
but,
picking,
you know,
a favourite child.
Exactly. And I'm not asking you to do that. So one of your children, like, whose story through your research or the knowledge that you already had really stands out for you as a hero of yours amongst all of the heroes?
Okay, well, so I actually come from a science background. I studied chemistry in college, so I have a bit of a, you know, I have a twinkle in my eye when it comes to kind of trailblazing scientists. And actually, a woman who was born in Donegal, Kay McNulty, she emigrated with her family to America, and she was extraordinary. She was a maths genius. She was recruited by the US Army to calculate ballistics trajectories. And she was one of six what they called human computers. So if anybody's seen the movie Hidden Figures, these women had extraordinary mathematical brains. And she was one of those. She was one of six who programmed one of the first digital computers, ENIAC. And they were responsible for programming the entire computer. And yet when it was unveiled in 1946, the women were told to act as hostesses and look good. So they were never acknowledged at the time. And of course, when Kay married, she had to resign her job, and her husband was a computer developer. And he was a widower, and he had two children from his previous marriage. And when they got married, he gifted her a cookbook and said, "You are our new cook." So she cooked. She raised seven children, and she also programmed, totally uncredited, her husband's computers. So later on, she was absolutely recognised for it. But at the time, can you imagine? It's such a waste of a brain in lots of ways, you know?
Yeah, indeed. And she's amongst many in Everything is Manasseh, 365 days of celebrating Irish women. The image on the front's interesting. What were you depicting there? I'll show our listeners who might be.
It's kind of like an Irish version of Rosie the Riveter, and it's certainly. I suppose I wanted this book to be a shot in the arm and say, look what we've achieved and what we can go on to do.
All right, it's published by O'Brien and available in all the usual places, I'm sure, and plenty of online stores as well. Brilliant stuff, and as you say, a nice little stocking filler. very shortly, in about a week, we'll be able to say Christmas is next month. So it's pretty close. All right. Best of luck with everything, Kunak. Thanks so much
Thanks
for your
so
time.
Much, Greg,
bye-bye. Kunak McGann there. The book Everything is Manawesome. There you go. I've been told, and I'm open to correction. And do you know what? I was open to correction. I have been corrected. And there's no harm in this because it gets the message out there. Lorraine tells me that there is a statue in Stranorlar of Francis Brown, who was a local poet from the Finn Valley area. And I know Francis's work. And Lorraine says, I think it's the Glenfinn area. It's to recognise her writing work. So are there any other statues of specific women to celebrate their contribution to Donegal society and society in general? Apparently there is a statue of Francis. Is there any more out there? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Texas Ollie, a.k.a. Ollie Hepburn. Ollie, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, man. It's all good. Is good.
It's good to have you on the show. Right, people will know you, of course. You're a horse. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, actually.
Yeah, I'm actually, they call me the horseman. You know, I tour international with two crazy horses, and So now I'm back in Ireland. I'm back living off grid, and I never meet much people unless I go out, you know, to do a little bit of music. I'm a country western singer and Irish ballads, you know. So I go out at the weekends and do some sessions with people, you know.
You are
so that's
all,
it.
Yeah, brilliant. And that's that keeps you very busy, of course. Now, you are taking part in the RTE dating show Love in the Country. Your episode airs on Monday, the 28th of October at 9:35 on RTE2. So tell us what you did as part of the show, Ollie.
Well, how it came about, I was in a thing where I'm looking for people to, you know, foreign people that comes over here and they work for a little bit, you know, and I give them their food and take them around and show them places. And that's how it became. They found me in that ad, and they asked me, would I like to be on Love in the Country? And I said, what's Love in the Country? I never seen it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they explained to me what's it about. A guy I didn't have, and I was looking for a woman. I was looking for someone to come and help with the horses and help me do a little bit of, you know, tidying up and building. So I said, yeah, I'm not too busy at the moment. I said, yeah, sure, no problem. You know, I'm game for a laugh, you know.
And what were you looking for once sort of the opportunity arrived? You know, you've brought joy to young and old throughout the years with the amazing tricks and what have you that your horse have performed. Now you want to bring, I suppose, joy and delight to that special person. Is it companionship mostly you're looking for, Ollie?
Yeah, companionship, you know, someone like maybe, you know, someone millionaire or someone with their own land so they could keep my horses. No, I'm only joking. Okay. No, I'm looking for a companion. Maybe I'm looking for a soulmate, you know, someone that loves horses, loves animals, and lighthearted, and just nice person.
And you bring a lot to the table too. Your sense of humour, you bring the laughter, you bring the entertainment, yeah. Bit of dancing or what have you. I mean, you've a lot to offer as well, Ollie.
I do, yeah, but I'm a modest man. I'm not gonna brag about
that's my job.
What I've done and what I can do, you know.
All right. So this has been filmed now. So do we have to watch the show on Monday to find out how you got on? So what do you do during the show? So there's a speed dating element to it, is there?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. They pick 8 ladies for me, and then we whittle them down until 2, and then you have to make a choice. But I'm that nice guy. I wouldn't make a choice. I said, I'll just exchange numbers. And they said to me, yeah, Ollie, that's a good idea. Because I said, listen, I wouldn't like to be knocked down on national TV.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I'm not going to do it to anyone else. So they said, yeah, that's a good idea. We can follow up then. You know, maybe I shot myself in the foot by saying that, you know, but I wouldn't say no to the last 2 ladies, you know.
I get you. It just wasn't in your nature.
I'm a gentleman.
Okay, so we'll find out if anything come of this numbers exchange on Monday. Don't give it away, Ollie, but I presume that we'll find out something on the show.
You will indeed, yeah. Watch the show. I'll guarantee you, you'll be entertained, you know.
Brilliant. All right, well done, Ollie. Looking forward to that. And as I say, hopefully you sound like a lovely man. Hopefully you find love, if not through this show, whichever way you choose to. Thank you very much indeed. That's Ollie Hepburn, a.k.a. Texas Ollie. And you can see his dating experience on Loving the Country on Monday, the 28th of October. It's at 9:35 p.m. on RTE2, or available very shortly thereafter, I'm sure, on the RTE player. A caller says, you refuse to mention the elephant in the room. Whoever the anti-migrant nationalist candidate will be getting my number one. That's fine. It's up to you. Charlie McConlogue, not on Highland because the presenter is biased, says another listener. Pat the Cope hasn't stopped working, always working hard for the county, says another listener. I missed the start of your discussion with John. All parties and candidates, and I only heard Ain't Too mentioned once in passing as by the way. I feel Ain't Too candidate Mary T. Sweeney would be a very strong TD, very good for the whole of Donegal, and let's have women power to the fore, indeed. And Mary T. on the show regularly. It would be quite the story if she's successful. Thanks to John and Greg for an interesting analysis on the upcoming election, coming in from an Inishowen listener there. And on it goes. Right. Good morning, Greg. I'll come back to that in a second, actually, because I have my next guest, Rena Weld, on. She's a recruitment manager at Matrix Recruitment. Good morning to you, Rena. Thanks for your time. Can you hear me, Rena?
I can hear you, Greg. Can you hear me?
Well, I can now. I pushed up the correct fader. That was all on me. Right, OK. We're speaking off the back of a new survey out. It's the 7th Matrix Workplace Equality Survey. It was conducted online in August. Over 1,200, in fact, almost 1,300 adults in Ireland working across a broad range of industry sectors and regions took part in it. And there's a few key findings, Rena. And what are the key findings that Matrix is highlighting for us today?
The key findings there, Greg, are around the fact that there is still a lot of discrimination within the workplace. We've seen over 70% of respondents have seen discrimination in the workplace. And we've also seen a quarter of respondents state that there is a rise in far-right sentiment. And then as well as that, I suppose, just to kind of show the importance of why employers need to take action, is a key finding shows that over 70% of the respondents state that they have either left or would consider leaving a role because of discrimination.
Now, I presume.
So it does show that employers need to take action about this.
Well, that's what I was going to say, actually, Rena, because whilst three quarters say the workplace discrimination is an issue in Ireland, do employers see that, I wonder? Do they have the systems and mechanisms in place whereby if someone in the workplace feels that that is happening, that they can sort of identify it? Because it's quite possible that there are managers or business owners that think everything's rosy in the garden.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Greg. And that's why Matrix do this survey, to add value to employers and to show, I'm sure, you know, many perhaps don't see the far-right sentiment as prevalent as what we have found there. So it is to raise awareness. We have seen a lot around diversity, equality and inclusion initiatives across Ireland. All HR leaders, it is a key area of focus for them. So I do believe that the focus is there. Perhaps there is a question around the effectiveness of the implementation. So employers can look at take this information back. They can see, okay, well, look, Matrix have identified there is an issue here. Take it back to their own organisation. I would encourage employers to conduct, you know, surveys across their own workplace and see, you know, what issues are there, if there are any. And from there, they can take actions then to suit their own workplace.
Yeah, and just to be a little bit more specific, in the far right sentiment at work, what we're at, and some people might take issue with that phraseology, what we're actually talking about is really an increase in discriminatory remarks. People maybe feel empowered to reference people based on their skin colour or their background, and just general maybe negative commentary towards minority groups. I'm not sure there's necessarily an increase in society in that stuff. What I do think is there's an increase in people feeling that they can say it, because you know what, free speech, I can say what I like. Maybe you can, but sometimes the workplace is not the place for that.
Certainly not. And how we've seen, the survey has shown it's manifested here as discriminatory remarks or jokes, spread of misinformation or conspiracy theories, and opposition to diversity and inclusion efforts. So what I think is really important for employers to look at is early education. You know, as soon as workers are in the door, or, you know, if it's not already been done, implementing it to show education around unconscious bias, as well as unwanted behaviours and what they look like. I know there's a technology company, I was speaking to there recently, someone who's in there, and their head of Ireland actually goes around to each team to make sure that they are doing their annual courses in terms of what discriminatory behaviour looks like in the workplace, because it's always changing, you know, and it's always progressing. So I think that's a very good example of how companies can do it. And even, you know, looking at intentional inclusion, and this could be more so on the discriminatory, you know, side, putting maybe a fan on the desk for, you know, in terms of looking at women with menopause in the workplace. So those small actions can make a huge difference in that intentional inclusion.
I get you. What I thought very interesting as well was what I see is a significant increase in gender discrimination. Up from 25% in 2023 to 36% in August. So that's an 11% increase. Does the data allow any conclusions to be drawn as to why there should be such a significant increase in gender discrimination?
It doesn't. We haven't gone into that, but that's something certainly we could go into, you know, next year in our survey. So we haven't pinned down, you know, exactly the personal experiences. It is an online survey. You know, we're not kind of interviewing individuals to get their individual stories. But I do think that the gender pay gap reporting initiative, that should make more and more difference every year. Already, employers with 150 employees have to legally report on any gender pay gap information, and that is expected to actually apply to companies with over 50 employees into 2025. So that should have a positive impact, you know, around that gender inequality in the workplace.
All right. Rena, thanks very much for that. I do appreciate it. You can get more information on that and the work of Matrix Recruitment. Just search them out online. Right. Someone contacted me with the following comment. As you know, we were talking last week about the availability of driving tests. There's a significant backlog in Donegal. There are just 4 driving testers in this county. One based in Donegal town, 3 in Letterkenny, none in Inishowen. Now, in reality, the Inishowen is covered by driver testers from the other centres covering tests there. But 4 for a county of, you know, 170 plus thousand clearly isn't enough, or there wouldn't be such a significant backlog. And I was speaking to some people from Inishowen waiting over a year for a test. But we got a contact from someone with skin in the game, shall we say, and just wanted to clarify some stuff, or just to put their side of it across. I've been a HGV bus and car instructor for many a year now. Last week, issues on the driving test backlog was again confrontational. The driving test pass rates for every test centre in the country are available on the RSA website. Letterkenny runs around about 62%. The national pass rate is around about 49%. Now, this means that if, let's say, 45,000 tests are carried out each year, half of that amount goes straight back onto the waiting list. That's 22,500, isn't it? So they say it's never ending. Now, if the RSA approved driving instructors, who, by the way, pay the RSA €250 biannually to keep their qualifications, had more input who can actually go forward for a test, then the backlog would be cleared overnight, don't you think? So, I mean, that does make a bit of sense, of course, because you tick the boxes sometimes, don't you? Get your 10 or 12 tests and you go and do your lesson, but maybe your instructor goes, my word, this fella can't drive to save their lives. Should they be going forward for their test? FORSA are the driving examiners union, goes on the listener. Recently, the examiners were paid $5,000 each to let the part-time examiners become full-time. These extra examiners will increase testing, but not the pass rate. The ADI instructors need more skin in the game. There you go. Okay, so listen, there's an angle on every story, isn't it? And that's another one there. Good morning, Greg. A 24-foot mural of an immigrant has just been put up in Ireland. Who's paying for this? I want my tax money spent on things for the Irish, no one else. Get someone on to explain why this face, this blow-in's face, was put up. We have enough culture. If we want African culture, we'll go to Africa. Right, okay. It's very important to note that there are people from Africa who've made very significant contributions to Irish society for hundreds of years. I'm not quite sure of the mural that you're talking of, but there's an awful lot of Irish people, priests and others, who there are murals and statues to in the likes of Africa, because we also went over there and contributed significantly. But that's a caller, and their view. Hi, Greg, I have a query. If it's November 29th for voting, is that why the toy show was moved to the following week in December? As I'm reminded, like Room to Improve, it's alleged they were given advance notice by the government too on the available home grants, as it's usually on Thanksgiving weekend. As I heard a reporter trying to explain to an American why you can't have both on the same day. So maybe we'll be looking at turkeys on that day now. It's going to be a Black Friday for some. Maybe it'll be light relief from the US elections on November 5th, as it's Guy Fawkes Day in the UK. But no matter what the result, there's going to be fireworks. That comes in from Kevin in Dunlow indeed. The Late Show was moved forward very early, and there was speculation at the time that they knew something we didn't. Listen, the bottom line is it was pretty much accepted, and we were talking along the lines of it being the 15th, the 22nd, or the 29th. That was our working theory. Now it's down to the 29th, we believe. But they could pull a surprise yet. Looking forward to the US elections. It's going to be very interesting. I'm not sure what I want. I'm not sure what the right thing is. I'm not sure what the world needs. Is it a continuance? If Kamala Harris gets in, is it a continuance of what Joe Biden achieved or didn't achieve, for that matter? Is she going to come in with a fresh brush and change things? What is the situation if Donald Trump gets elected? How will that impact world relations? The US economy it does affect us, but it's by the by. But it's really what sort of they do internationally in the likes of Ukraine or the Middle East or what have you. I don't know what the right thing is for the world, or if either of those two candidates actually provide a positive outcome for us as a whole. We'll see. What do you think? Let me know. 086 60 25,000. Hi, Greg. Clothing bank down at the entrance to the council offices on the Neil T. Blaney Road. That's if you're in Letterkenny. And I think those sort of public services centres, I can't remember the phraseology for them, but there's normally a clothes bank there. I flew out of Birmingham yesterday and there were thousands at the airport queuing. My advice is get to the airport early. Another caller says, I'm in my 50s and I'm scared of bangers and fireworks, as years ago, a banger was thrown at me outside a public house. That's the kind of impact it has, and some people don't realise that what your actions, albeit fleeting and you forget about them, they can leave a lasting impression on somebody else. Another caller believes that the Gardaí need to be out watching outside schools where children are trading these types of illegal things. Children should not be unsupervised on Halloween night. Elderly people are also vulnerable. A caller believes the tourist office in Letterkenny should be in the town square along with public toilets. The square used to have tea rooms and people from buses got tea and sandwiches. A nice centre gathering place. Okay, that's an interesting one. Are all footpaths going to be gritted? This is a lot of money wasted in town, back road footpaths. I don't believe that footpaths are part of the gritting programme, and it's kind of up to, I suppose, the business owner, if it's a business, or indeed if it's a private residence. I don't know. Back to the people stuck in Birmingham. Why did that young man and his family not come forward when this... Okay, that's actually completely separate. I'll come back to that. Hi, Greg. How's things? Vinny and Martin from the V&M podcast. And we're running a 24-hour online live podcast this Sunday for Wee Ruby Houston. We will be live on Instagram with a donation link. And if there are any businesses out there that would like to support, please get in touch. We'd appreciate a really, wee plug in your show. Of course, Vinny and Marty, two lovely lads. And they are doing a 24-hour online live podcast. Now, I thought I could waffle, but to do it for 24 hours, check out their Facebook page. If you can donate, please donate. And if you're a business owner and you'd like to support them, please get in touch. It's Sunday, the 27th of October, with special guests joining them. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with more special guests on this show. Have a great Tuesday, everyone. Stay safe and stay tuned. John Breslin's up next around the Northwest.